Hello, and welcome to the Women Who Code podcast. This show features conversations between diverse technology professionals discussing women in the industry, cutting-edge innovations, the future of work, deeply technical topics, and the ways that we can all work together to make the world a more inclusive place. We hope you enjoy, and if you do, please subscribe, rate, and comment.
I'm Amanda Frederick. I'm the Program Communication Manager with Women Who Code. Welcome back to another episode of the Women Who Code podcast. I'm really excited to be here with you today for a Women Who Code conversation with Nitya Narasimhan, Senior AI Advocate at Microsoft. So Nitya is a PhD, a parent, a polyglot with over 25 years of software research and development experience spanning mobile, web, cloud, and AI. She's also currently a member of the AI advocacy team at Microsoft, helping developers build the next generation of AI-driven experiences responsibly with AI on Azure. So we're really excited to have you here today. Welcome, Nitya.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. I'm so excited. I love your community.
I'm sure the Women Who Code members are going to be really excited to hear about this because, right, AI and ethics and responsible development is really, I think, in the top minds of a lot of people now. And it might be helpful to learn a little bit more about what you actually do in your role. Could help us understand sort of your function at Microsoft, right? So as a member of the AI advocacy team, what are some of your key responsibilities in your role, especially in helping developers build AI-driven experiences in Azure?
Yeah, so that's a great question. And if I had to boil it down, I mean, like, there is two words, right? One is technology and the other is community. Those are the two things that matter to us. And when I look at it in terms of role, we're actually sitting at the intersection of three things. We're looking at the product team on one side, we're looking at the community on the other, and then we're looking at partners who might be in this space. Maybe they're building tools, maybe they're building services. And so in my role as an AI advocate, what I really do is I'm developer zero for the product team. Like, when we build a new product, right? Like, they come to us and say, hey, we're trying this out. Do you want to try it out and tell us what's going on with it? Like, is it working the way you think? What do you think your community wants to see out of it? That kind of thing, right? So we're developer zero. And then from the community perspective, and I think we all know this, right? We feel so overwhelmed these days. Like, there's new stuff every day. So from the community perspective, I think for an advocacy perspective, we want to really skill people up in AI the right way. And you mentioned responsibility. Hopefully we'll get to talk about that. So in that sense, we want to go out into the community, tell you, hey, here are some resources. Let me run a workshop. Let me actually tell you what the terminology is, and then take you from the point where you're aware of it to where you can do something actionable with it.
Oh, that's great. And we had talked a little bit in preparing for this about collaborative partnerships regarding your role as well. What more can you say about that?
Oh, you set me up so well. You're actually one of them. So when I mean that partnerships, I really mean that, like, we all know this. Women Who Code knows this. Microsoft knows this. You know, OpenAI knows this. We can't go it alone. Like, right now in this, we all need to work together to make this thing kind of really diverse and inclusive and make sure that everyone is participating in the ecosystem. So when I think about a collaborative partnership, there's actually two kinds. Collaborative partnerships with product or technology in mind. So for example, I love Hugging Face. I'm kind of working to, like, see how we can use some of their models and some of the demos I'm doing. And then there are partnerships that are community focused, like Women Who Code. And we're like, oh, okay, this is so great. Like, how do we get to make sure that that community is also, like, skilling up on these technologies?
So when you're working with partners, communities, when you're working with the development, the developers, so in your role, how do you actually advocate for responsible AI practices? So what sort of initiatives or programs are you involved in?
Yeah, that's a good question. So I'm going to basically set the stage for those who are not familiar with what responsible AI means, because I think we all hear about responsible AI and it could mean different things to different people. At a very high level, we just want to make sure that whoever's using AI is doing this in an ethical way, that the data sets you use, the models you build are fair. And that, like, anyone is, because let's kind of see, right, that AI is going to be making decisions, taking, like, building content. Are we making sure that that content is safe? Are we making sure that those decisions it's making are correct, right? So when I look at responsible AI practices, we actually look at it as a continuum. First, we need to teach people what the principles are. So Microsoft has these 6 principles for responsible AI, and we should share some resources with you later, but it's things like fairness, transparency, accountability, right? So we kind of want to educate you on the principles, but that's not enough. You need to know how to put them into practice. And so when you look at that, there's 2 audiences, and I know a lot of Women Who Code members are data scientists, but there are also developers. And data scientists are very immersed in the space. So one of the things my team's been doing is looking at what does responsible AI mean for the developer? Like, how can I get you skilling resources? How can I do a workshop that teaches you how to debug your model with this tool? So we have something called the Responsible AI Dashboard, where if you built a model, you can plug it in and it'll actually kind of give you insights into how well your model's performing. Is it fair? Is it reliable? Where are the errors, et cetera? And then on the other side, we also kind of want to make sure that once you've built your stuff, like all of these things you can try out as a data scientist, but someday you've got to operationalize it. You've got to make it a product. And so the same tools, how do you integrate in Azure? So yeah, we kind of do the open source on one side and then Azure integration on the other.
So I want to talk a little bit about the skills, sort of technical and soft skills someone would need to do your role. But before we pivot there, I'm interested. So let's say someone's an AI developer or a data scientist, and you kind of gestured toward this a little bit, but they don't have an advocate on their team, right? They don't have someone like you. What can they do? What kind of resources or tools can they access? And you kind of gestured toward this, but a lot of our listeners don't have someone like you, right? So what could they do to do these this development more responsibly?
Excellent. So there is a resource we have called Responsible AI Hub for Developers, where we've got some of these workshops available. There's also an open source repo called Responsible AI Toolbox that's built by Microsoft Research. So that all you need to know is Python, Jupyter Notebooks, and you can get going with that. Last but not least, and yes, I have to give the shameless plug to Microsoft. Microsoft has this resource called Microsoft Learn. And if you go in there, the same kind of like the workshop I was telling you about that you can do in the open source space. Now, if you want to do that with Azure, you've got to usually have an Azure account, and that means that, you know, there might be costs, et cetera. But if you go through Microsoft Learn, we actually have that module available where they give you a sandbox with Azure in it. So if you are somebody who's actually in a team and you want to understand responsible AI practices, I would say 3 things. First, go to that site for responsible AI on Microsoft and learn the terminology, understand what it is that you need to like be communicating about and how it relates to your organization. Because responsible AI in retail might mean something different from responsible AI in medicine, you know? Second thing is then once you understood that, take that module, skill yourself up. There are even certifications, badges, things you can put that say, I have the credential. I've actually done the training in this. So do that. And then the third thing I would say is once you've got that, do a project, take something in your team that you think, because of what you've learned, apply it. Because what we have found is when you try to apply what you've learned, that's when you actually start seeing where the gaps in your knowledge are, right? And you're like, oh, okay, I didn't quite get that. And yeah, in that context, I guess shameless plugs are abounding today, but we do have an, we have an AI Discord. All of us hang out there. So if you have kind of like issues, you just want to come chat, feel free. I think we'll send the link out to you later. But you can also find it on learn.microsoft.com/AI. It'll tell you what the community Discord is. And also, if you're in New York, come visit my meetup. We meet every month. We cover a lot of this. We are actually going to be doing a responsible AI themed meetup in March. So perfect timing.
Oh, I love all that. And I think the plugs aren't so shameless. I think it's, you know, it's interesting to hear about your actual role at Microsoft, but then it's kind of how can other people access these resources and tools if they don't have someone like you on their team? And you had talked a little bit about upskilling and certifications, and more specifically, what is like really core technical skills does someone need for your position? And how do you keep up with all of that continuous learning and upskilling?
Okay, great. I'm going to break that into 2 questions, because one is like, what are the technical skills you need to be in my role? And then I think the second one, which is actually very fascinating and important for us, regardless of what role you're in, is how do you keep pace with the change in the ecosystem today so that you're kind of not being overwhelmed, but you're always kind of knowing enough to skill yourself up for the changes, right? So first, let me talk about advocacy. When you think about advocacy, there are actually 3 skills that are super important as an advocate, right? One, you need to be able to communicate really well about the things you're doing in a way that matches diverse audiences. Second thing, you need to be really conversant in the tech platform. You need to know something. So if I'm an AI advocate, you need to like know at least one AI provider, one AI model, one programming language like Python. Make sure you have depth in one thing, right? So you can use that as a frame of reference for knowledge transfer. Third, you obviously, again, you got to know one cloud provider. Please do try Azure. But it could be GCP, it could be AWS. The thing I want to really, really emphasize is that you don't need to know everything. Pick one thing and know it well. One language, one cloud platform, one AI tool or provider. And then what you'll find is you're able to transfer that knowledge to someone else. So if you work with Azure and then you're like, hey, I need to use GCP, it'll start making sense. Oh, I used App Service here. I need to move it over to, I don't know, App Engine there or whatever, right? So I can make that leap. The last thing I would say, and I'm biased in this a little bit, is that the fastest way for you to keep up, and I'm going to talk about various ways in which you can keep up with what's going on, but the fastest way to keep up is to leverage the community around you. Especially if you are thinking of a career change, or if you're thinking of you want to grow your career and pivot it away from where you are towards more AI stuff, find people that you think are who you want to be, right? It doesn't mean you have to be them tomorrow, meaning like they inspire you. Like, that looks like something cool. I want to do that. Follow them on social media. Don't ping them. I'm just saying follow them, because you want to get insights from two levels. One, you want to get like the big picture, the kind of like folks like Yann LeCun, like they're giving you these big picture of like, where is AI headed? What are the challenges for the ecosystem? And you want to understand that. And then you want to follow a few people who are in your community locally, because you're like, hey, that person seems to have the same interests as me, because then you can actually collaborate, right? Meet up, find yourself a small posse of people who want to study together, do something together. And you might find that your journey is not alone anymore. Does that help?
I love what you're saying, because I think that we're taught you should get a mentor, right? You should get a mentor. Yes. And sometimes it's can be hard, or maybe time constraints or distance or whatever. I love what you're sort of saying, this sort of like mentorship by shadowing, right? Like, by following people you think are doing smart and interesting things that you want to model. I think that's a really good middle ground, right? For getting insights from people without necessarily having to do that, the full out mentorship experience.
I know, and it's also really nice lazy hack. You know that they're going to filter out all the bad stuff, right? Like, someone who's at that level is not going to be talking about all the tiny things. So I'm like overwhelmed with the amount of innovation that's going on. If I want to know what is this one thing that like across the industry, everyone needs to know, I listen to three people, like, for example, right? And I'm like, if they say it in their busy day, they took time out to like put a tweet or write a post, it's important, right? And what I've also found, I love some of these online courses. I mean, Microsoft's, of course, but we've got open source curriculum, I should actually say, if anyone is interested in skilling up on AI, I think the link is like aka.ms/genai-beginners. But what I'm trying to get at is that there is this community of people learning together, whether you find them locally or whether you find them online or whether you find them via these kind of like, hey, we're all doing the same course together. Those are also kind of mentorship opportunities, because I'm kind of going off a little bit on a side note, but it's actually useful. If you end up being a person on these community forums who helps others, tomorrow they may hire you to do that full time. It is like, if you actually are a person who loves helping people and you're on these forums because you had questions, but then someone else asks the same question and you just hop up and say, I just had the question, I want to help you. Over a period of time, they take notice. This has happened to a friend of mine who used to be kind of like, you know, on the forum because he was doing the certification. And then they said, wow, you seem to know all the answers and you've done all of this. Do you want to do this full time? And they hired him. So my point is, you start shadowing people for the insights they give you. Then the next step is you start sharing your own. And before you know it, people are following you. And you've come to a cycle.
You really can't underestimate contributing, right? We talk about that. A lot of women who coach just like start building your portfolio. And that could be these sorts of contributions you're talking about, or speaking at events, or publishing articles and things like that. Just start showing your demonstration of knowledge. And I do want to ask you a little bit more about soft skills to partner with the technical skills. But do you have any concrete tips for people to find other diverse technologists like you to follow? It's easy for us to say, well, like, go find people and follow them. But like, do you have any, how can our members find more diverse technologists who are in this field? How would you recommend they go about doing that?
Okay, so I'm going to say three things. And I always use the number three because it's apparently that's as many ideas that the human brain can hold at a time. But the number one, I'll reiterate again, is physical community meetups. Especially for diversity, I'm going to give a shout out to Data Umbrella. It's run by a friend of mine in New York. It's really for diverse, underrepresented people. Hi, Reshma. And one of the things she has done, which I really loved, is she runs open source sprints that is for women, right? And like when you go there, not only are you learning something, but you're literally making a contribution to a well-maintained thing, right? So my point is, first, there are groups. It could be Pi Ladies. It could be R Ladies. It could be Women Who Code. Like, look at what your specialization is. React Ladies, like every framework, every tool has a community, right? So go out to one of those. You might go to a few of them and then find people that resonate with you. And kind of then you can move it offline. Follow them on Twitter. You follow each other, join a Discord, have conversations, so that kind of thing. So that's like a very loosey-goosey, hey, I don't know what I'm looking for, so let me go find that. So that's one thing. The second thing, and this, it's a double-edged sword, but LinkedIn. I can tell you, LinkedIn has a bunch of groups. Like, so there are AI-related groups in there. And one of the things that I have found valuable myself is everyone's doing newsletters these days, not that I want to subscribe to them. But what I have found that's useful is periodically people will actually go live on LinkedIn and have these kind of conversations with others. So the ability to kind of be in a conversation with somebody you admire at a very close thing, like they're saying, here's my philosophy. And you're like, all right, I'm right here. Let's connect up. So the LinkedIn value for me is it shortens the time between you talking to someone and then actually connecting to them in a professional capacity, right? Like you connect to them, you're not connected to their network. And then last but not least, definitely look out for large scale conferences. And I have to again give a shout out. We're running a Microsoft AI tour right now. Women Who Code is worldwide. So I think it's ak.ms/msaitour. It's going around the world. It's going to be in Tokyo on the 20th. Then it's headed to, it was just in Bangalore. I believe then there's Sao Paulo, there's Berlin, there's Paris. So these are giant conferences. They are free. Never say no to free, right? Because they're giant conferences, they're skilling. Go in there and go in there with your professional credentials. Like you're going to take a workshop, exchange cards, say, hey, this was really cool. How can I contribute? Can I write a blog post? Do the smallest thing you can. But those are the three ways, because I think I'll also say, in my opinion, diversity is a loaded word. Like we tend to put people into buckets of, oh, it could mean I'm neurotypical. Like it could mean that in my current context, right, I belong to a very small population because of my intersectionality across various criteria. And the more of these events you go to, the more of these communities you encounter, the more likely you are to find your tribe, so to speak, right?
I love that. So when you're navigating these communities, when you're going to these conferences, when you're doing these sort of workshops and things, so you had unpacked a bit some of the technical skills that someone could. So I think that I heard you say upskill in one cloud platform, right? One
yes.
AI provider, get really good at one language. And you also had mentioned communication, which is more of a soft skill. And I wondered, in addition to communication, are there other soft skills that someone could benefit from gaining to do your role or just generally in this industry?
Yes, absolutely. Soft skills are very underrated. We like don't understand how important they are. And I think like calling it a soft skill just kind of tends to make us compartmentalize it, but they're not. I call them communication skills because they kind of take multiple ways. One, there's public speaking. We're all terrified of public speaking, but public speaking puts you on the map. There are resources like Global Diversity CFP Day. There are RightSpeak Code used to be around. But I think the simplest thing to do is find a meetup and offer to do a lightning talk. And if you're afraid, this is my hack for everyone who's afraid. Do your first talk. What you're going to do is you're going to go watch somebody else's talk. Many of us, including people like me, we post our talks with our slides right on GitHub and YouTube. What you're going to do is say, hey, can I go and summarize your talk in a lightning talk for my community? grab the video, grab the slides. You already have slides. You didn't have to make them. You know what it is because you just heard me talk about it. Summarize it in 5 minutes and say, this was an interesting talk I heard. I wanted to tell you why. That will break the ice. You'll have done your first talk. You didn't have to prepare for it. You didn't have to worry. You didn't know the material. It was all there. There's tons of ways you can. So do public speaking. Now that'll take you to the next thing, technical writing. Speaking is not enough. You need to write something. Now writing is a lot of work. And yes, I'm not saying all of you have to do it. I have procrastinated on it for 10 years and I'm trying to get into a habit now. But what I'll say is be intentional. Try to do one blog post a month or one a week, whatever is up to you, but make it about you. Try to use that to amplify what you learned or what you did because it's SEO. When people search for your name, they need to find your name coupled with these blog posts with all these words, and that'll raise your profile in the community. So write. And not only that, when you write, you start realizing how difficult it is to take something complex and write it down in a very simple thing. You'll learn a skill. Last, I'm biased, but visual storytelling. If you follow me on Twitter or you've seen me, I love sketchnote. And the tip I'll give you here is sketchnoting has two value propositions. If you're a learner like me, if you're a visual learner, you will find that the art of writing things down reinforces ideas in your head. And the visual creates patterns. So even if you never remember the words, I remember the picture I drew and I remember what I was talking about. So it improves your recall. That's one. Two, if you're watching another speaker, you sketchnote and then you post that on social media, they're going to retweet it. Lo and behold, suddenly your profile is being seen by everybody. And in a sea of tweets, all taking screenshots of the same slide, there is this really weird colored thing in there. It does not have to be perfect, but it will be unique. So pick that up as a skill. We have resources for that too. And then I kind of had said this before. The thing that was hardest for me, that's hardest for a lot of women, is we're very afraid to raise our hands. And because we're like, we know we're going to be judged. And we're like, oh, we need to be 100% perfect because we're carrying this burden of like, hey, you know, already I'm behind the thing. So what I want to say is you've got to be fearless. You got to cultivate strategies where the thing that you're afraid of is actually your superpower. Be fearless, but be very curious. Don't just be fearless for the sake of being fearless. Be fearless about learning. If you did something and it was spectacularly bad, you learned you were spectacularly bad. Write a blog post. Say, man, I was so spectacularly bad. And it's still good. And move on. I will also say that especially now, especially in this ecosystem, open source is your friend. People are shifting jobs like crazy. The environment is moving. Put your things out in the open because if you're doing stuff in your company, in your work, and nobody else knows, then when you need to leave and change jobs, nobody knows what you did. So on a daily basis or monthly basis, put stuff out there. Contribute to open source because it's always there. People will look at it and say, oh, I'm looking at this person's profile and it looks like they make contributions to three different repos that have to do with AI and Python. And it could be small documentation. Take your technical writing skills, apply that writing documentation. If you read somebody's docs and you didn't understand them, fix them. They will appreciate you for it because it meant that if you didn't understand it, someone else didn't. So yeah, long story short, really, really work on communication skills. Think about telling stories. People remember visuals. They remember anecdotal conversations. They remember metaphors. Cultivate those and contribute to open source because you will actually find your profile on that page and you in turn would have helped someone else.
Wow, you're giving such good advice here. I think that really concrete things that people can start doing today, right? We could, you know, finish up this podcast and go and do any number of these things literally today, which I love. And I want to hear about your career journey, about how you developed all of these sorts of skills and all of this knowledge. So I wondered if you could share with us how you arrived at your current role as a senior AI advocate at Microsoft, because I think you started in software research and development, right? And then you've journeyed here. So could you tell us a little bit more about that journey?
Sure thing. So I'll start by saying that it took me maybe 15 years to realize that there was a common thread across all of them. You know, it doesn't look apparent initially, but the common thread ended up being that what I really, really loved was I like to be aware of things And then I like to translate that knowledge into something. I have to make something. Could be a project, it could be a drawing. I have to make something out of it, right? So it turned out that when I started, so I actually did my undergrad in electronics engineering, strangely enough. And when I graduated, there was this tiny company called Infosys that's in the garage in India. No, it's really a multi-billion dollar. I was like one of the earliest employees. And I remember my mom said, they're never going to go anywhere. So you need to go do grad school. So I did. So thanks, mom. But the bigger picture I was going to say is that I think the first step in my journey was having parents who said, educate yourself and be independent. And then take this lesson down the road of engineering. So my first step was actually doing a graduate degree. And I bring this up because I did a grad degree. I did a PhD in distributed systems research. I was very lucky because my advisors actually took that into a startup. So very early on, I got the sense of like, oh, we're not just building stuff. We can literally create companies and products out of it. And getting that like ground floor look at the amount of effort was really useful in shaping how I looked at that ecosystem, right? But then I was like, okay, I've been doing this thing for like 6 years. I really love everything, but I need to do something different. So I joined Motorola, and I was in a Motorola research for about over a decade. And I bring that up because at that time, that was the mobile revolution. That was the Razer. That was the Linux phones. That was Android, right? And then there was iPhone. And like, so we lived in the middle, like right now, that's the reason why I want to connect where we are now, because that remarkable thing where you feel like, I'm on the cusp of this thing that is changing lives, right? I don't know how many people here are going to remember the rotary phone where you had to like dial. And here you are, where are we? So we, one of my earliest memories in Motorola research was we literally had duct taped wireless cards to the back of these boards, which had the chipset, and we were programmed to them. That was the phone. Like we were trying out Wi-Fi, right? But what I meant is that when you're in the middle of like these revolutions, you seriously feel like, hey, I'm the first to try something. I can't go wrong. Whatever I do, I'm teaching someone something. So I started in research, and it gave me this lifelong love for tinkering with things. I really want to like break things down, understand how they work. And then like you might see patterns and stuff. The whole thing with the research is you want to really see how does that apply when I actually want to productize it. So that brought me to my next stage. Like after about a decade in research, I was like, okay, I'm also a parent, and this is a kind of like a note to all the parents out there. It's never too late to change careers. In my case, very late parent. So I was like, okay, I'm going to scale back a bit. I'm going to be there for him, right? And so I started working remotely. I've been working remotely now for 14 years. 15, he's 15, yeah, 14, there we go. So at that point, I decided I had to do something that would allow me to be an entrepreneur in my own right. Research requires support. Open source, web development, working with local startups and consulting does not. So I started doing that. But what I was missing was like people. You know, you can't have water cooler conversations. You can't brainstorm an idea and say, am I thinking this right? That's when I discovered meetups and I was going to New York City. And that got me into community. So my story actually went from I really liked research, was doing innovation, all the stuff, having a great time. And then I'm like, okay, I need to start doing something on my own. What will it be? But now I miss the people, so I need to go to community. And then when I started working in the community space, I became an organizer. I loved teaching people. And I realized, man, if only there was a job where they would pay me to do this all day long, right? And it was, and it's called developer relations and advocacy. So here we are. So the lesson I will tell you is, yes, you should plan your career path, but don't discount the detours. Sometimes the path you think you should be following may not necessarily, maybe it's like you need to take the detour to find out if that path was where you want it to be. And if you really, really want it to be on that original path, your detour will, you will find a way back. But if the detour took you off on the scenic route and you're like, you know what? I never wanted that freeway anyway. Now you've discovered a whole new world you wouldn't have seen otherwise. So in my case, I would say you have to have something that guides you into this path. In my case, I really love telling people how technology works and helping them build things. And that ends up being something that's true in research. It's true in development. Like in research, I was like, hey, something new. Let me tell you how you can build stuff with it. As a consultant, I was like, hey, I know how this works. Let me help you build your first prototype. And I'm in advocacy. I'm like, oh, I'm at scale now. we just got this new technology. Let me tell you all how you can use it in your product. So you need to have something that motivates you all the way through.
I love what you're saying. I mean, I think something that we tell our members a lot we talk about the whole technologist, right? And find a career that nourishes you. And I think that what you're saying really speaks to that. It's also do what you're good at, but also what your heart calls you to, right? Like that's how I came to Women Who Code was I had a good communications job, but I was missing a mission, right? Like how you were missing people. I was just missing something meaningful and nourishing to apply my skills to. And I think that sometimes we talk ourselves out of following our heart, but as you're showing the possibilities of what you could find if you do follow, that is so much more, right? You obviously there's a lot of stages to career. So I wondered if you had some more specific advice for people at different levels in their career, right? So we have maybe students, career changers, or people who are professional developers. Do you have advice for different stages of your career?
Yeah. Okay. So I'm going to use this analogy. There are those three criteria. And I've used this analogy before for when I talked about community growth, but it's going to be the same for career growth. And I'm going to use a gardening analogy. So when you're a student, think that you're a student, you're starting out. So for context, in my life, I've lived in three locations. I've lived in Africa, I've lived in India, and I've lived in the US. In Africa, there's this tree called the baobab. It stores its water because it's in a drought, right? You have to be like that as a student. What you wanna do is you wanna focus on one thing because you've got loans to pay. You're like starting out. You have nothing to show what you know, right? So focus on one thing. Create a LinkedIn and GitHub profile, contribute to other things, network, 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 but build one brand or build one skill. Don't try to do everything because then people won't know what you're good at. They'll be like, we don't know who you are, right? So use one thing and reinforce that in everything you do so that when people look for that one thing, you're going to pop up. It could be like you decide, I am going to be the Python expert who builds DALL-E-based images for fashion. That's your tagline. Make sure everything you do, write a blog post tied to fashion. So like, I think we talked about this before, you need to have one domain interest outside of tech, maybe it's fashion. So point everything to it, but try to make that. As a student, one skill, build deep. Connect on LinkedIn, make sure you have those profiles, populate them. When it comes to career change, so in India, there's a tree called the banyan. The banyan tree is kind of like a huge trunk. It'll spread out and every branch will drop roots to the ground. So it can like cover like miles, a single tree, right? The value of that banyan tree that I want you to take away as a career changer is in a banyan tree, once that thing is mature, if you hack the trunk, it will not die because it's put so many roots everywhere that it will survive. So as a career changer, you want to have that mentality. Yes, the trunk is what got you into whatever career you are, but keep dropping roots all the time. Go into different communities, build a skill, drop a root. Should anything happen to that main thing that you were, you're not going to like chopping that off will be fine. You can pivot to something else. So as a career changer, you really want to think about how do I take the things I know and transfer them to new domains? In other words, I have this trunk. How do I create a new branch using what I know, but adding it to a different domain, right? So keep that in mind. Constantly be spreading out and dropping branches. If you're a professional developer, I live in the Hudson Valley, New York State. My metaphor is it's like fall. Every year in fall, all the leaves go. Come spring, they renew. You've got to be like that. Every year, you need to shed the things that are no longer relevant to your career. And you better pick up new skills that refresh you for the new year. So what does that mean? It means if you're in a particular place and you're still in the same job and the same line of work, get certifications, keep them fresh. Because the certification is going to say, this person knows this, but three new things came up last year and they know that too. So do that. And then if you are in fact trying to pivot into something like AI, but you're still in an old role where it's not AI related, that's okay. Build and share projects in AI. And you will still be able to kind of show that kind of regrowth. And that in fact, that the fact that you're refreshing your profile across all three is itself a really strong skill for employers, right? Because they're looking out for people who can be resilient to change. Right? We all know, like, no one really stays in the role that they were hired for. The most successful people will keep pivoting within that org to like meet whatever the needs are. So the stronger you are at showing your ability to like make these shifts, the better for you.
Yeah, I think it's interesting what you're saying, because I think that we often hear messaging like diversify your skills. And I think that's easy to maybe confuse that with learn a ton of languages, learn a ton of platforms. And I love what you're saying. It's about, you know, truly diversifying your skills, right? Out and but meaningfully in a way that supports your core interest, right? Or your core passion or your core, you know, skill set. And I think that that's a really important distinction, because it seems tiring, right? You can't learn all the languages, right?
Exactly. And it gets very stressful, right? You put like 6 months of your time getting this, and then next day you wake up and you're like, that's no longer relevant. Here's something else, right? So if you didn't have a reason, if you didn't have a strategy behind why you did something, you just did it because everyone was going towards that same cliff, then you are just another lemming, right? So you shouldn't do that, but strategically pick up skills. And that's the other thing I think we might have talked about at some other time. Pick up skills to fill gaps. Don't just take the same skill and build it again and again, right? Try to complement it. Try to get something that's just a little bit away from what you already know. So you're basically growing your skills.
Exactly. So in addition to like the sort of the skills you had, gesture towards some of the character qualities in your career journey as well. So you mentioned, say, like fearlessness, and you're gesturing toward like resilience and things like that. So in terms of pushing yourself to grow in your career, so what are some of the strategies that you employ to foster fearlessness and experimenting and embracing failure and advocating for yourself? What advice could you give to our members?
So I'll start with the first one, which is you should find allies who are on your side. And I'm going to tell you two anecdotes. One is, you know, there have been giant conferences. Google I/O is a great one. Like a long time ago, I used to go for all the Google I/O conferences. And in many of these, I used to feel really overwhelmed. If you've ever been to these conferences, there's a lot of men, very few women, right? And you're like, I don't know anybody and I'm here. And it's like, oh, so I used to get all anxious. That's when I actually started sketchnoting, by the way. But what happened is that also made me kind of connect to other people who were like me. There would be a whole line of folks would be sketchnoting. And so we started kind of meeting up, like there would be like groups that would go together. So when you have allies, then you have somebody who's watching your back, who knows you, you've built up like a relationship over time, right? So when you do that, you don't feel alone, even in a crowd where you are not the same as 90% of the audience, you still feel like, okay, I know one person. By the same token, if you're an ally and someone you know is doing a talk, do them a favor, go sit in the front row so they have one face they can look at that they know. We all say this. But the other side of the allies is also closer to home, because the truth is that everyone moves, everyone changes things, but there are going to be people at home who know you inside out, right? So in that case, make sure that you cement your relationship with them in a way that they are aware. Like I'm kind of going a little bit off track, but like one of the advices I've always gotten from home is, you know, I'll be like, oh my God, this thing happened again. And this, like, they're not listening. And here, the advice I'll get is, look, you can tell people something, but you can't make them do it. So the only way you will beat yourself up is if they tell you and you didn't do it, but you can't. So you got to figure out allies closer to home who know you. Then play the long game. I think one thing we all do is we beat ourselves up because we try something and it doesn't work. And you're like, oh my God, I must be terrible. And it's very, very hard to pick yourself up again and again. So many microaggressions, you can't do it. But if you think to yourself, this is a long game, right? Yeah, it's all fine. In a year from now, I expect X. And then you're like, if I didn't reach that, that's different. But then you can ignore the paper cuts and you can keep your eye on, okay, these are all just like annoyances. So play the long game. And I think you mentioned failure. So I'm going to talk about this kind of differently. Like, I'm also culturally brought up in a household where you have to, like, you know, be perfect, not be perfect, but don't show weakness, right? Like, don't say, because there's enough people to tell you you're terrible. You don't need to like give them ammunition. But what I started thinking of was different. I was like, instead of like not embrace failure, what if I scheduled my failures? Like, what if I literally said, I'm going to do this thing. I know 100% that I'm going to fail on it. Like, I know it. I'm going to take this risk. I know I'm going to hate it, but I'm going to do it as my personal dare. I'm going to check it off my list, write about it. But because I scheduled it, I can psych myself up. I can like, so even when you think of it, then when a real failure happens that you didn't anticipate, you'd be like, oh, okay, I don't need to schedule one this week. Task done, right? Resolution met. I need to do three scheduled failures, done. But the bigger picture is, We need to de-risk this notion of what failure is. We think about failure as us looking less than perfect. Instead, we need to think about failure as us taking risks others didn't, and therefore we moved further. And so what if other people did? As long as you told yourself that I expected that, I was smart, I anticipated it, I had a plan B to get around it, then you're not going to be afraid. So schedule your failures, keep track of them, maybe even keep yourself a little brag board of like, hey, I failed 10 times this week. That's a personal record. Good for me. Anyway, that's just, I think it's great. Failures are growth. I tell my son this, and that's kind of one of the reasons why I said parent as well. When you start like having to tell other people what to do, you realize half the things you tell yourself are not what you tell them, and you better take your own advice.
And interesting is this idea of like, imagine the person you love most and how you would take care of them and what you would say to them. And, but then to apply that to yourself, and it's kind of a harder thing to do. And I love what you're saying, because I mean, all the data shows us that sort of fear keeps women from doing things like applying for a job they don't fully qualify for, or asking for their raise, or in your, what you're saying, like maybe developing a certain skill or public speaking. And it's, but if you can practice this muscle, right, which is what you're saying, if you can practice this muscle. Go ahead.
No. I hear you. I think you're 100% right. I like the idea of like a muscle. Yes, it's muscle memory.
So you've given so many good concrete tips to our members, and we're wrapping up the conversation here. And I wondered, before we head out, did you have a pro tip for our community, or pro tips if you want to share, just any final pieces of advice that you would give them?
I am going to say, if you're going in AI right now, if you're entering AI, the first pro tip I'm going to have for you is make sure you have a GitHub profile and a Hugging Face profile, and do one job in open source. One, get your name in there in some repo that has AI or Python on it. And once you do that, it's that first step that's the hardest. And someone is going to say, oh my God, thank you for this tiny little change you made. And that'll reinforce. So the number one tip, actually, I will step back and say this even more strongly. The number one tip I have for you is, your career is your brand. It does not belong to the company you work for. It does not belong to the community. You've got to nurture it, right? So make sure that you take those steps to nurture your career by putting that profile and committing one thing, one visible task. That's an AI. Pro tip number one, advocate relentlessly for yourself. Advocate mm-hmm. for yourself, write those blogs, because you're your strongest advocate. You're the only one who knows what you did to get there. So advocate strongly for yourself, but do it in a way that's visible in the communities you care about. LinkedIn for professional communities, something like Hugging Face for like machine learning communities, and everything else, like physical meetups, is up to you.
Okay. And so as far as these sort of like digital communities and things like that, how can people find you? If people wanted to learn more about you or connect with you after this episode, how can they do that?
Oh, that's easy. I guess I've been around too long that I pretty much own my first name on all this. So it's GitHub. I'm Nithya on GitHub. I'm Nithya on Twitter. Is that Twitter X? Whatever. I'm Nithya N on LinkedIn, and I'm Nithya N on Hugging Face. In fact, I would love it if you would follow me on Hugging Face, because I'm going to be spending the next month on there writing posts about AI. And if you want to get started on something and you want to like write something with me, hit me up. Let's kind of work on something together. I'll be kind of planning out like a learn in public style series. So it should be fun.
Okay. If anyone else is like me, for my own edification, what is Hugging Face? It's my first time.
Oh, you should go check it out. Look, huggingface.co. So Hugging Face is this community for AI enthusiasts, but it started out mainly as like, you know, research folks, people who build models, they publish it. So they kind of have like an open source platform where you can get machine learning models built by the community, open source models. They also have tools, like they have like these libraries like called Transformers, which are the core for machine learning. But here's the nice thing, they also have courses right there on the site that teach you how to use them. The community folks there are genuinely nice. They have something where you can literally deploy and show off your projects right there. Most importantly, what's one of my favorite features is, because it's a very research-friendly community, you will see people sharing the latest projects. They're sharing the latest papers, the advances, there are discussions. So I think of like GitHub is where you want to be because you're developing stuff. You want to productize things, kind of basically have the profile for a company you work. Hugging Face is if you want to start diving into machine learning and AI and you just want to follow a few people who are doing interesting things, start there. Same deal. Create a profile, follow the interesting people there, see what they're doing, write a post, write a blog post, try out something that they've put and chuck it out there on the spaces. Yeah.
Okay, perfect. I'll check it out. Thank you so much. Well, Nega, thank you for coming on and speaking with us today and the Women Who Code conversations, your insights. Really appreciate your time. And to everyone who tuned in to the Women Who Code podcast today, stay tuned for more inspiring conversations and insights from leaders in the tech industry. Be sure to subscribe to the podcast for updates as we release new episodes to keep you inspired to thrive in your tech careers. Thank you so much, Nega.
Thank you so much for having me. I appreciate it.
Thank you for listening to the Women Who Code podcast. To find out more about our mission and the work we do across the tech industry, visit our website at www.womenwhocode.com. You can also follow us on all socials at Women Who Code. Be sure to check out our YouTube channel, Women Who Code, with hundreds of hours of free educational videos. Thanks again for listening, and remember to subscribe, rate, and comment.